Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. We've got a great episode today. We're talking about the new box of Ant-Man and Wasp, and we go on a small tangent about desert islands. Before we get into that, I want to thank the patrons for keeping the lights on. You can find all the information about that at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. I want to thank Discount Games Incorporated, always selling items at the maximum allowed discount price. If your local game store can't find or doesn't have what you need, be sure to check out Discount Games Inc. And last and certainly not least, Muzon Minis, high quality gaming products made by gamers for gamers. They've been fantastic to work with. I use all of their gaming accessories. They really help take my tabletop gaming to the next level when I do play in person. All right, without any further ado, here is our episode about Ant-Man and Wasp. Please let us know which team you're on.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a...
Welcome back to Across the Bifrost. Today I'm joined, as always, by my co-host Pat Dunford from Across the Pond, and we are talking about the biggest little release we've had in a long time. We are talking about the tiny box of Ant-Man and Wasp. But before we dive into that, Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you, TT. I'm excited for Ant-Man and Wasp. These are fan-favorite characters. I've really enjoyed the movies that they've been in recently, especially original Ant-Man is one of my favorite MCU movies. So I think I'm going to enjoy putting these people on the table.
Yeah, and you get four models in this box, right? Which is an incredible value that you're pulling out of this box. So the box that Atomic Mass Games has kind of leaked and spoiled to us via panel to plays and their live streams contains Ant-Man and Wasp and three tactics cards. So which superhero do you want to start with here first, Pat? They do definitely have some similarities.
Yeah, I think we've got to go with Ant-Man, right? He's the Ant-Man in Ant-Man and Wasp. He comes first, I think. So, looking at his card, I immediately think, maybe before we talk about either, we should talk about Transform. Because
I think talking about Transform might be wise.
Yeah, because when we read their cards, we need to talk about their normal form and their Transform version. And I think Transform is a really important thing to address now and then reiterate upon later. Because Transform is a very weird rule, and I think it's easy to overlook some of its interactions. I think it's a really powerful rule. And I've seen some people talking about Ant-Man and Wasp, and they don't seem to be accounting for Transform or what it can do. And I think it's a big part of these characters and how they work on the table.
Sure. Do you want to lead us through? Do you want to explain the Transform mechanic to everyone? And then we have an FAQ we actually talked about in a previous After the Credit scene that I think is relevant to talk about as well.
Okay, well, I'll do a brief summary of the mechanic, and then you can leap in with the FAQ. So, in a nutshell, Transform has a bunch of rules that are in the online rulebook. And what it lets you do is, when you transform, you take your range stick out, and you place your transformed version of your character within range one of the character, and then you remove the old version of the character. So this is why Ant-Man and Wasp come with two different models. You actually need both for gameplay, right? So if I have Ant-Man normal and he's going to transform into Ant-Man Tiny, Ant-Man Tiny is going to pop up range one away from him. And when you count for the base on top of that, it's like he's moved 2.5 inches. And this is a big deal because Ant-Man and Wasp have loads of ways to transform in their turns and outside of their turns reactively. And it means they've got a lot of extra movement hidden on their card where you might not otherwise think about it. And they're going to be able to do these little small placements throughout their activation and in response to their opponent. And it can do some weird stuff. It makes the characters really fast, and it lets them sometimes protect themselves by doing things like transforming to be in cover, or transforming to be out of line of sight, or even sometimes you get attacked, you transform and you move out of range so that a second attack from the same character can't get you. It has a lot of important interactions that I think people are overlooking.
Yeah, I mean, transforming out of stealth range, right? Spoiler, both these characters have stealth is super relevant. So I think it's a really cool ability. I call it jitter sometimes. That's just a term I made up. Will Pagani yells at me every time I use it, but that's just, I don't know why. They jitter, right? They transform. They move it in. So I think it's really powerful, and I think it's a good thing to keep in mind. They have a lot of non-expected movement, is I think a good way to put it, right?
Yes, really good. So what was the FAQ that you mentioned?
This might be getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but the FAQ that we talked about, Pat and I talked about it on one of our previous after the credit scenes. We talked to Pagani and we got some clarification on it. But basically the FAQ is, if a character can't hold an objective token, they also can't have them placed on them, and they can't pick up objectives, which was a pretty big thing. Previously, we talked about, if you couldn't hold it, could I interact with the rubble pile and find the Kree power core? And you could interact, but you couldn't pick it up, so it never becomes a Kree power core. By the same token, you can't have something mission objected onto you if you can't hold something, right? Because mission objective places a token. So it really just clears things up, kind of qualifies? I don't know the right word there. Clarifies? I think that's the word I was looking for. Clarifies the interaction with that. So if you can't hold the token, they've basically FAQ'd it, so there's really no way that you can get that token on you. So it prevents tokens from going into the void or things like that. It prevents weird rules lawyering that we didn't expect. So both of these characters, when they're transformed into their tiny form, and we'll get into that, can't hold objective tokens. And that means that they can't pick up objective tokens, they can't have objective tokens placed on them, and they can't hold them. So it's a great FAQ just to kind of clarify things before we dive into these two awesome tiny superheroes.
Yeah, so awesome tiny superhero number one, Ant-Man. His normal and injured sides are identical. So we're going to focus on his normal side, then his tiny side, which is his transform side. In either case, he has 3 physical defense, 2 energy, and 3 mystic. He has 5 stamina, that's 10 in total, and he costs 3 threat. His normal size is speed medium and size 2. And he's got 2 attacks. His first is his Pym Particle Punch. I love the alliteration. It is a range 2, 4 damage physical attack that gives power equal to damage dealt. And after it's resolved, this character may transform into Ant-Man Tiny. If it transforms, it drops all objective tokens it's holding before transforming. The second attack is the Bullet Ant Barrage. It's a Beam 3, 7 dice physical attack that costs 4 power, and if this attack deals damage, after this attack is resolved, the target character gains the poison and stun special conditions. So that is a lot of power mitigation, right? You're making it so your opponent can only generate 1 power, and you're removing 1 power from them in the power phase.
Yeah, I think those are fantastic attacks. Worth noting that both of these attacks are physical attacks, and this is interesting. Do we want to go over the rest of his like normal size, or do we want to jump to the tiny right now, Pat? And for those of you who haven't seen these cards, the cards are kind of laid out like Ultimate Encounters, where they share a group of stats in the middle, like Pat recognized, but they have some individual things like movement and size in the top left and the top right.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go all the way down the card and then go back to the tiny version. I think that's going to make more sense. Let's find out. As we go along, maybe we'll change it up for Wasp. So he's got 2 superpowers on his normal size. The first is change size. It's an active power. It costs him 1. This character drops all objective tokens it's holding, then transforms into Ant-Man Tiny. This power can only be used once per turn. And then he's got Pym Particle Control. Reactive 1 cost, does the same thing. So whenever he would be targeted by an enemy attack or would suffer collision, you can use the power and you transform. So the reason you would want to do that is because of rules on his tiny side. So looking at his tiny side, first his attack, ant-sized uppercut, is a range 1 attack. This is a new thing in the game, a range 1 attack. Wowee, staggering power. It is 6 dice and gives power equal to damage dealt. And after it's resolved, this character transforms into Ant-Man normal. I should mention that Tiny Ant-Man is speed short and size 1. He has change size power. This is the same as normal Ant-Man, but it makes him big instead of small. And he has Hitch a Ride. This is a 0-cost active power that lets him be placed within range 3 of his current position once per turn, which is a huge movement for no cost. On top of that, in his tiny form, he has Stealth, which is always a good ability. Stops attacks from targeting him outside of range 3. And he has Tiny Superhero. This character may reroll any number of defense or dodge dice. Additionally, this character cannot hold objective tokens. So what we're seeing here with Ant-Man is a character who, on his big side, is pretty normal, but can hold objectives. On his small side, he's really hard to kill, but drops objectives and becomes much more mobile. And then he can do cool things where he switches back and forth to move around the table and do different kinds of damage. So he seems like a character that is going to jitter around the board, beating people up and grabbing objectives, dropping them, hitting people, moving around. He's going to do a lot of stuff.
He's definitely going to do a lot of stuff. The question I have is, like, is it stuff you need to do? He kind of reminds me, this is an American term. Have you heard of a goat rodeo, Pat?
No, I haven't. Please tell me more about a goat rodeo.
It's a lot of fanfare, but not a lot really happens. And that's what I'm a little worried about with Ant-Man. Like, I feel like he's going to do a lot of things, but does it get you anywhere? I don't know. And that's one of the things. I've only had a couple games with Ant-Man and Wasp. I'm not sure if they're goat rodeos or real rodeos. Not that I really like rodeos. But we're just going to lean into this analogy now. So definitely has a ton of movement shenanigans. I don't know. I'm really on the fence what to think about him.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I'm not sure either. So things I like about Ant-Man, I like how fast he is. Between his ability to change size and his hitch a ride, he is hypermobile. And the low cost of that means he can do it even on turn one. Like, on turn one, he can, for example, move medium twice, then change size, which moves him another 2.5 inches because it's transform, and then hitch a ride to be placed within range three. That's ridiculous, right? That only costs him one power. I don't think any other character in the game can go that far for one power cost, you know, outside of Avengers and that kind of thing. It's real good. And the other thing that I think is appealing about him is his damage output is pretty high, right? In the right situation. Ant-sized uppercut, being a 6-dice power-generating attack on a 3-threat character, is way above the rate you'd expect to pay. And Bullet Ant Barrage is a really powerful beam, doing 7 dice and mitigating the power potentially of multiple targets.
Sure. So I'm excited to good cop, bad cop this a little bit with you. I'm going to compare him to Hawkeye, another 3-threat character. A character mm-hmm. that in Avengers, an affiliation they share, can double medium move plus his equivalent of hitch a ride for one, right? His builder is a flat 5 dice. It can be either energy or physical for the builder behind it, right? As opposed to the ant-size uppercut. His builder has 10 times the amount of range behind it, coming into the range 5 as opposed to a range 1. So again, like, I get where you're going. Ant-Man can do a lot of things, but are they things that need to happen?
So if we compare him to Hawkeye, you're right. Hawkeye has more range, and he's got cool things going on for him. I love Hawkeye. I think he's an excellent character. But Ant-Man does a lot of things that Hawkeye doesn't as well. And I think, really, they actually only have one similarity, right? Which is the place. Because otherwise, you couldn't have two more different characters. So I don't know if that comparison is really fair. What I like about Ant-Man is, for his cost, he is fast-moving and hard-hitting and resilient. But that resilience comes with a little asterisk of in the right circumstances, right? When he's small, he's resilient. And when he's big, he's pretty vulnerable. He goes from being like as tough as Miles Morales to as vulnerable as Shuri, which is quite a big swing.
Yeah, and my flip side with that is like his ability to exert his damage, right? He's obviously requires power in order to do that. And that's one of the tricky things with Ant-Man is he doesn't have a great power generation, right?
Well, he's got his 6-dice power generating attack, right? I think that's what you need to use. And, I mean, I've said before that attacks aren't that reliable at generating power, and that's true. But even so, like, that, I think that's got to be your plan, is you pop up to somebody, go small, hit them, and get enough power to then fuel the rest of your kit. And in particular, the only thing he really needs to be able to fuel is the reactive ability to turn back into small when he's attacked. Because, I mean, Bullet Ant Barrage obviously is very good, but that seems like the kind of power, because it's 4 cost, you're probably only expecting to use that after you've been attacked and taken some damage.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of where I circle back to, right? It's like that bullet and barrage is what I really want to leverage off of him. I really love the idea of a beam after a hitch a ride. Like, I love any kind of place effects to maximize the beam, but he's a hard time getting to that power standpoint, right? I agree. I think we both agree that, right, attack builders can be inconsistent. And my fact that he only gets one swing with that tiny, with that ant-sized uppercut, right? Like, regardless of whether or not he did damage or not, he's going to be full-size Ant-Man after. So there's a chance you hitch a ride, you swing, you don't have the power to go back small again. So then you're just kind of stuck there staring at them. But again, he's a very interesting character. And I'm sure there is a way to leverage and really make him shine with his ability to move all around the board. But we also have to factor that in with, like, with his great mobility comes that a huge negative, right? In not being able to hold objective tokens.
Yeah, not being able to hold objective tokens is a very big deal. I think it's very problematic for both him and Wasp, because on their tiny side, they're characters who are really mobile and really resilient. They would be perfect objective holders. So having that limitation baked in definitely puts a damper on them, in my mind, because it's taking the thing that you really want to use them for and disallowing it. That said, I think there's still a place for them, because I think Ant-Man, like I said, he's way above rate in terms of speed, damage, and resilience because of that cost. Kind of like how Nebula is, right? Nebula is a very powerful two-threat character because of Assassin and the fact she can't grab objectives. And I think because he can still be on secures, I think he's more relevant, obviously, on the crises than Nebula is. And it makes me think that he just wants to be on the right crisis where you're playing something like Skrulls or Alien Ships, and you just don't need everyone on your team to be grabbing objectives.
Yeah, and I guess maybe I'm too Avengers focused here. I have a hard time arguing for Ant-Man over 2-point Black Widow.
Well, I mean, I have an easy... Well, really? But he just hits so much harder. Like, I think that's the clear benefit that you're getting in that exchange. And yeah, maybe that's not worth it in your opinion, and that's totally reasonable. But I mean, I think that advantage is there.
So, okay, let's back up a little bit, right? If we're going to take a character that hits hard, I don't think either of us is going to go to Ant-Man first, right? There are other three-threat characters that hit substantially harder.
I don't know. I don't think he's embarrassing. Like,
I don't think he's embarrassing, but I don't think he stacks up to a Valkyrie.
Really? Because his best case damage output is pretty comparable to Valkyrie's.
Is it?
Well, her strike is 5 dice. His best case strike is 6. And then they've both got 7 dice spenders. Yes, hers has flurry, but his is a beam. I mean, the main thing that she's got going him is Warrior of Legend, right? And I suppose you could add the throw on top of that as well. But, I mean, he is much faster than her and much tougher. And I don't think his damage output is so far below that you'll be feeling bad for taking him.
I don't like the Valkyrie to Ant-Man comparison for damage at all. I think Valkyrie comes out by far ahead. Yes, he's faster, right? I think it's really important to point out the Asgard ability for Valkyrie, right? So she can power her first turn charge or something like that, right? Ant-Man can't first turn Ant-Size Uppercut in a vacuum, right? He needs additional help in order to do that.
No, he totally can, right? He can advance.
Oh, sure. You're right.
He can hitch a ride and he can Ant-Size Uppercut. You know, his first turn be move medium, transform, place, punch, transform. And he can do his first turn reasonably can move him like 15, 16 inches and do a 6 dice power generator.
Your move plus a 3-inch place plus a base, sure. 2 paces, sure.
Yeah.
Maybe you value that. Again, like I just don't like the inconsistency there. Valkyrie for me gets multiple bites at the apple. I think that's a horrible analogy, right? And that's normally what I want out of a damage dealer. It's what I like about Corvus. I just don't like my eggs all in this single ant-sized uppercut basket. Don't get me wrong, I think it's a good, it's a fine attack. I just don't like how hard it is to get multiples of them out of there, right? I think we both agree that one ant-sized uppercut isn't going to shake the world. And we think, and I personally think it's unrealistic to expect one ant-sized uppercut to fuel your bullet amperage.
Yeah, but I think it's realistic to expect one ant-sized uppercut to fuel a second in one of those kind of situations where you're just next to a character, you know, maybe you're both on an objective, you've got nowhere to go, you just want to do damage. It's pretty realistic to think you can go ant-sized uppercut, become big, use change size, become small, ant-sized uppercut to become big again.
Sure, but that comes with the qualifier of you had to start that activation tiny, right?
Yeah, that's true. But I think oftentimes you will, because if you're attacked at all, you're going to change to tiny size. And once you've done that, you've got no reason to change back. Barring weird transform movement shenanigans.
It just comes into that interesting thing of, like, why are they attacking Ant-Man, right? Like, you could put an objective on them, right? It comes at that high cost of Ant-Man's going to threat to drop in. I guess your ideal is Ant-Man is standing on something, right? He's standing on a secure to score it. So they have to attack him to try to move him off of it, right? And that's when you can transform him?
Yeah. I mean, he is, yeah, he's a character that, it, because of his combination of decent damage, good speed, and decent defense, he matches up pretty well against other three-cost characters, right? It's your Hawkeye comparison. Like, he can initiate the fight with Hawkeye, where he does his move, transform, hitch a ride, punch, and that's not going to take out Hawkeye, but Hawkeye is not certainly not guaranteed to take him out in retaliation, and he can be fighting on Hawkeye's secure on the back of the table.
Yeah, I agree that they're fighting on Hawkeye's secure at the back of the table is powerful. I think the flip side there is, like, if Hawkeye is not taking out Ant-Man, it means Ant-Man's small, and that means that Hawkeye doesn't really care that he's fighting on his secure, right?
Why? Because he can still secure when he's small. He just
can't hold objective tokens. You're right. Yep. Sorry, we went over that in the beginning. Yeah, maybe you're right. Like I said, I'll have to get him more on the table. Pat is obviously more pro Ant-Man than I am, but let us know what you guys think on Discord, Facebook, or Twitter. You can find Pat on Facebook, me on Twitter, and then patrons obviously have access to our Discord. I am a little bit higher on Wasp for sure. Are we ready to jump over to Wasp, or is there anything else on Ant-Man you want to cover, Pat?
No, it's all good. Let's go on to Wasp. So I think Wasp will be a little bit quicker, just because the main thing about Ant-Man, the transform, right? We've already covered that in detail, and that's Wasp's main gimmick too. So looking at Wasp's card, her normal size is medium. Well, I should mention her stats in the middle of the card. These cards are very confusing to read. Okay. Wasp, Janet Van Dyne. She has 3 physical, 2 energy, and 3 mystic for her defenses. She has 5 stamina on both sides and 3 threat. Her normal size is medium movement and size 2. And she has 1 attack, her size-changing smackdown. This is a range 3, 5 damage physical attack that gives her power equal to damage dealt. And after it's resolved, she becomes tiny. Then she has changed size, just like Ant-Man, lets her become tiny. And she has Pym Discs. This is an active power. It costs 3. Choose an interactive terrain feature of size 3 or less within range 2 and throw it medium. This superpower can be used only once per turn. Nice little terrain throw there. Doesn't throw characters, unfortunately. Pym Particle Control is the same as Ant-Man. It's when she's targeted by an attack, she can become tiny. And she has Flight. Her tiny side is a long mover, size 1. She has Stinger Blast for her first attack, range 2, 5 dice energy. It gives her power equal to damage dealt, and the target character does not gain power for damage dealt by this attack. Not amazing on a 5 damage attack, but certainly nice to have. Her second attack is Wrath's Fury. This is her spender. It is range 3, 6 dice, 2 cost energy. After this attack is resolved, this character may advance medium. After this attack is resolved, this character transforms into Wasp normal. She has changed size, tiny superhero, stealth, and flight. So she has a lot of rules in common with Ant-Man, right? They can both change size in their activation. They can both change size in response to being attacked. And they both have stealth and tiny superhero to reroll their defenses when they're on their tiny side. So she is also able to change back and forth a lot and incentivized to be small to defend herself, with the downside of not being able to hold objectives when she does. The main differences to me is she has got flight and a long move when she's small, and her attacks are energy, and she does more damage in her small size, whereas Ant-Man wanted to be big to use his spender. What do you think of Wasp?
See, I'm actually way higher on Wasp than I am for Ant-Man. for those reasons you went over, plus the fact that she has a throw when she's large. I know it's only a terrain throw, but I still just really value throws. I think it's interesting that both of these characters are Avengers, but really get no value out of the Avengers leadership outside of Pym discs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I like that she can stay tiny and have her damage output. Go ahead, Pat. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so you're right. Pym disc, to remind people, is the terrain throw that she can use. But even that might be tricky to use if she needs to transform first to use it, right? And then she's not getting the discount. If she has to use change size first, for example.
She would have to Wasp's Fury, ideally, right? She would Wasp Fury, get large, Pym disc, change size.
Yes. All I'm saying is there'll be times when it doesn't work out to be what you want and you'll be a bit annoyed by it. But yeah, I see why you like her. I mean, the throw is a lot of potential damage, right? Size 3 terrain is very significant and very threatening for a lot of characters. And I like Stinger Blast and Wasp Fury as decent energy attacks. I especially like the fact that Stinger Blast doesn't give the opposing character power. That's pretty useful. I do like Ant-Man more. I think I like Ant-Man more because he rolls more dice. You know, it's just that extra point of damage on his attacks. But she is more consistent because her attacks overall are longer range, and she isn't lumbered with this 4-power attack in her medium-sized form. She's got a much better 5-power attack.
5-power attack?
5 damage.
Sorry. I'm with you.
Ant-Man has a 4 damage punch, and Wasp has 5 when they're in their normal sizes. That's what I was talking
about. Yeah, sorry, I caught up. Yeah, sorry. Little slow boarding the train there. Yeah, again, I just really like her because I think I can leverage her more in the tiny mode, right? I love this long move with flight combined with tiny superhero. I think stealth is just gravy on top of it. I love that I can double tap people with Stinger Blast and some of the early or mid turns even to kind of generate this power pool. And then I can leverage that power pool later on between Wasp Fury and then Pym discs is kind of the reason I like it. Like you said, Stinger Blast to me is just a really good attack. I obviously appreciate that it's range 2 over that range 1. And the big thing, like you said, it doesn't give power and it's still a builder. And I love that it comes with the energy tag on there. So I like Wasp more. I think it's interesting you like Ant-Man more. And I think it'll be interesting to see how we end up building rosters for the two of them.
Yeah, one of the things that you've mentioned a couple of times, right, is the fact that neither of them are very good Avengers. And it makes me think about what rosters they want to be taken in. And if they'll be taken together, because it's always hard, if you're not taking them in Avengers, it's always hard to fit multiple unaffiliated characters in your roster. And also, there's not really a strong incentive to take them together. I suppose you could say if you've got a crisis where you don't mind about their limitation with extracts, that's a reason. But similarly, on any other extract crisis, having multiple characters that can't pick them up is going to become increasingly detrimental, right? So I think you'll often have to decide which do you prefer. And unless you are a huge fan of these characters and you just want to play them, which of course is totally cool, nothing wrong with that, you'll probably be deciding which tiny person fits my needs better. And I say that because I think the power is in their tiny sides, right? Which of these is going to be the most relevant for my team, and then picking that one over the other.
Yeah, and I think in the after the credit scene, we're going to dojo some interesting lists here. If you're a Patreon, you can check that out. If not, you can check us out at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. And I do think their power is in their tiny side. And like I said, that's one of the reasons that I really like Wasp. But you can let us know if you're Team Wasp or Team Ant-Man in the Discord. Pat and I will humor you. And we'd love to hear from you. I don't know. I really like Wasp Fury, too. She gets the medium move plus a transform. So you can either stutter into the medium or you can medium into the stutter. The jitter.
It's pretty cool. Two power costs for that attack is pretty good, right? It's only 6 dice damage for a spender. That's not great. But it's got a decent range. Energy is a good attack type. You're getting the move as well. It's definitely a good attack.
Yeah, I just think I like her tiny attack form. Play a little bit better, but they do come with some team tactics cards. I'm normally pretty positive. I'm a little disappointed there's not a real great reason to take the two of them together. Pat just kind of hit on that. I wish there was a more compelling reason for me, at least, to take a tiny superhero team. That's all I'll say. Is like I would love an Ant-Man and Wasp team, and we'll talk about it in the after the credit scene, but I'm struggling a little bit to come up with a good list or a reason to take both of them.
Yeah, well, let's start then with the tactics card that gives you a very, very tiny reason to take both of them together, which is Pym Particles. This is an unaffiliated active card, and it says Ant-Man or Wasp may spend 2 power to play this card. Choose another allied character within range 3 of this character. Then choose an interactive terrain feature of size 3 or less within range 3 of the chosen character. The chosen character throws it medium. So you've got a spicy terrain throw similar to Wasp's own throw. Either Ant-Man or Wasp can take this card, and that is the tiny reason why you might play them both together, is that if you do, you've got more options as to when you can play this card and who can play it.
Tiny. See, I like what you did there. I think it's a good card. I do like the duality of it, of a card that isn't limited to either one. But functionally, it's just the same as an Avengers Pym disc, right? It just provides you an additional throw. Maybe you value being Eric Gwass being able to throw two things. But yeah, I think it's a good card. I don't think it's a great card, right? This card would have a hard time cracking my 8 personally.
Yeah, I agree. I think the point you made about Wasp throwing two things is a good example of why this card is not super appealing, because it's only throwing terrain. Throwing size 3 terrain is good, but there's not going to be a huge amount of it on the table. And the fact that Wasp already has the option to throw that terrain makes me think that it's not a great card for her. I would probably rather take it if I'm on Team Ant-Man than on Wasp, because I think having the redundancy of that effect on the character is not that important. And she needs to be reasonably close to the person who she's enabling the throw. Having said that, I do think... let me just have a read of this card again. Ant-Man and Wasp may spend 2 power to play this card. Choose another allied character to range 3 of the character. Okay, so one thing that I think is worth noting with this card, it's active, but it does let you do throws outside of activation, right? Wasp or Ant-Man and whoever they're making throw, none of those characters need to be activating when you make this throw happen. And it's pretty cool to have this option to do a big chunk of damage outside of activation like that.
Yeah, and like you said, just to reinforce it, right? Ant-Man or Wasp don't actually need to be doing the throw, right? It's just someone close to them.
I mean, they can't do the throw, right? They have to enable somebody else.
Oh, you're right.
It.
Yeah, it has to be someone else. Yep, good point.
Yeah, so that's important to consider. They have to be playing with a buddy, and their buddy is the one that does the throw. But like I said, them and their buddy don't have to have activated or don't have to be active at the time. It just has to be your activation. So that's interesting that you could have a situation where you have those situations in games where you have two sides of the table, especially on like Infinity Formula, but it could happen in any crisis. And on both sides of the table, you want to be going first because both sides, there's a really important character that you want to daze or KO before your opponent can activate them. But you only get to, if you've got priority, you only get to go on one of those two sides, and then the other one, they're going to get to activate that character first. It is pretty cool that in those situations, in theory, you could activate your character on the other side of the table from Ant-Man and Wasp and still do this throw and try to KO or daze multiple characters in your first activation in different parts of the table.
Yeah, I definitely think that has some merit. It'll be interesting. Like you said, they're both mobile enough that they can get the particle throw. They can get to near whichever buddy they need, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's a superb card, but I think it's interesting and it's not bad. I certainly wouldn't fault somebody for playing it. But like you, TT, right now, I'm not immediately thinking it's going to crack into my 8 for most rosters.
So then we have two weirder cards, No Escape and Reversal. Is the one you want to start with, Pat?
Yeah, let's start with No Escape. It is an unaffiliated reactive card. During an enemy character's activation, when it begins a move action and is within range 2 of 2 or more allied characters, before the enemy character moves, both allied characters may spend 1 power each to play this card. Before the move is resolved, roll 4 dice, deal 1 damage to the enemy character for each crit and wild result rolled. So you have two of your characters very near to an enemy. The enemy activates and wants to move away. Before they can, you get a chance to do some damage to them. I mean, obviously, the use case for this card is you're going in hard on an opponent, and you expect they're going to try and get away from you if you don't take them out, and you want to punish them for that. I mean, that seems fine. My big concern with this card is, I mean, I've used counterattack, right? It's on Baron Zemo, it's on Black Widow, and it does not do a lot of damage.
Yeah, I think one damage is about what you should expect if you're using this card, right?
Right. And the thought of doing one damage in a very narrow situation that requires me to have two characters in close range of another character, and they have to do a specific action in order for me to play this card in that circumstance. I'll be honest, because I want to give honest information to our listeners. I don't think I would ever play this card. I think its effect is weak, and it's very difficult to trigger.
Yeah, I sadly agree with you. This card, for having a lot of text, it's a bit of a goat rodeo. That was a callback.
It sure is. So, speaking of goat rodeos, we have another card, Reversal. This is an unaffiliated reactive card. After an attack that targeted an allied character is resolved, another allied character within range 3 of the attacking character may spend 2 power to play this card. Roll 4 dice. Deal 1 damage to the attacker for each crit and each wild rolled. So this is a different situation that if your opponent allows that situation to happen, then you get to punish them with a small amount of damage. In this case, you have to have 2 characters near the enemy and they attack you, and one of your characters who's not attacked needs to have the power to play this card after the other is attacked. For me, this is kind of the same situation. Like, it's a very difficult card to trigger because of the multiple restrictions, and the reward for doing it is not that high.
Yeah, we talked about like a similar effect in our last episode, right, with Ghost Rider and Wicked's Judgment, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing I like about Wicked's Judgment, A, it's not a tactics card, and B, I know exactly how much damage I'm doing before I choose to use it. I think my biggest complaint about both of these cards is it is just super random. Like, there are times when a character with one power I would like to take out, but just relying on these cards or having them in your 8 or 5 for these very niche situations just seems corner case, to say nothing else.
Yeah, I agree. Because the expected damage is so low, like, these cards are only really going to be a threat to your opponent when their character has, like, 1 stamina left, maybe 2. And then it might convince them not to do the thing that you don't want them to do. But even then, they can just do something else, right? Like, in the case of Reversal, oh, okay, I've got my character who's got 1 stamina left. You've got 2 characters, and if I attack one of them, the other one can attack me. Okay, so in that best case scenario for the card, either I attack the other character that doesn't have that has power, so the one without can't use the card, or if they've both got power, then I move out of range and do 1 attack instead. And that's, you know, then your card has made me do a small thing. And that's assuming, like, I'm on 1 stamina and I really want to attack you and I don't have any way to heal. You know what I mean? You have to check all, and you've got both your characters in range and they've both got the power so that whichever one attacked, I have to be reversed against. You know what I mean? You have to meet all these criteria for such a corner case to get such a marginal impact on your opponent.
Yeah, and I feel the same way with No Escape, right? I mean, I know not every character has a place effect, but like if I'm that close and you punishing me for moving away, I guess I'll just double attack you, which is like, you know, one of the core things I teach new players is like, if you can get a double attack activation, it's a pretty good activation. So I don't really like No Escape or Reversal. I think Pym Particles is the best. And it's interesting to me that this group of tactics cards follows Ghost Riders, where Ghost Riders are like, oh, these are super cool and amazing. And these are kind of like, well, in this very unique situation when Mercury is in retrograde, one of these cards might be decent half the time.
Yeah, I think these cards, I don't know, I feel like these cards exist because they're effects that the game designers want to have in the game. And you can imagine when they're helpful. I just think they've made them too restrictive. And yeah, I would discourage people from playing Reversal and No Escape. I think Pym Particles is neat, and I don't fault you for taking that one. It's cool, and I can see good uses for it. And it's the kind of card I might take, perhaps, if I was light on throws and I would take it in my five if I saw we were playing with a lot of size three terrain and I didn't have another way to exploit it. But I can't imagine ever taking no escape and reversal. I think it would be hard to create a situation where these cards are useful.
Yeah, I agree with you on both points, right? And Pym Particles is very close. They're obviously different, right? But it's very close to Heave-Ho. I think it throws a larger terrain piece, and then all the power cost is on one character as opposed to two, right? But there has been an effect similar in the game, right? Is there another one that throws an object?
I think that is the best comparison. It's like a beefed up Heave-Ho. And I used to play Heave-Ho back in the core set days, and it was fine, you know? And this is certainly a lot better. So yeah, I think it's worthy of consideration if you have either Ant-Man or Wasp.
Yeah, no disagreement there, Pat. So I did have a pretty serious question before we kind of wrap up this Ant-Man Wasp episode. I guess before we get to that, is there anything else you want to cover about Ant-Man and Wasp? Pat likes Ant-Man. I like Wasp. We both think that they are pretty cool corner case characters. Is that an accurate assessment, Pat?
Yeah, they're not characters that I'm going to slam in a lot of teams. But maybe you'll inspire me in the after credit scene when we talk about which teams they'll be good in, and we'll come up with a good plan for them.
And the other thing we want to know is, like, what are you guys going to do with them? They're interesting Avengers. They don't seem to have, like, an immediate home in anything for me. But we're curious. And these characters like this might end up having... This is the type of character that might have some insanely unexpected ceiling, right? We just didn't see some crazy interaction, and they have so many rules and very different ways of approaching the game that maybe we're missing something. And if that's the case, like I said, let us know. Yeah, we would definitely like to know. So, Pat, before we jump into the after the credit scenes, I need you to close your eyes with me. Let me know when your eyes are closed.
Okay, they're closed.
And I need you to imagine yourself on a deserted desert island, right? No one else is around. You're stuck in this island, right?
Okay.
You can have two characters from the Marvel Crisis Protocol universe come help you on the island with the caveat that they can't help you escape. These characters are there to help you enjoy your time, to better yourself, to better your time, to help you survive on this desert island. So we're going to take turns picking characters. I'll go ahead and give you the first pick. But what MCP character is coming to your desert island? Again, they're not helping you escape. They're helping you make a better island to increase your desert island experience.
Okay. Well, I think the first character under that criteria that I would pick... it's a pretty obvious choice for me. A personal favorite, and one that you have associated with me before, has to be Doctor Strange, right? Doctor Strange is a character that is very smart, very wise, very learned, right? He would be a good character to have lots of conversations with, probably the kind of guy that knows a lot about literature and can talk a lot about lots of wacky subjects, esoteric subjects. He's also a doctor, right? So he can help you if you get, you know, scratched or hurt on the island, and of course, most importantly, by a mile, he is a powerful wizard, and I can imagine he's got no end of spells to help you set up a wonderful island paradise.
Okay, and he could change your perspective of time, right? So maybe instead of feeling like 10 years, it feels like a couple minutes. So that
That's
I could see
true.
That being useful.
I didn't even consider that, but you're right, that would be awesome.
So I'm going to go with a different character here. I'm going to go same kind of vein. I'm going to go with Iron Man, because if anyone can construct something, like maybe I run running water on this island, maybe I want electrical power, maybe I want, you know, cold fusion power, right? I feel like with a high degree of certainty that Iron Man is going to be able to create something that just enhances my overall experience there. And while, you know, Iron Man and, you know, Doctor Strange are both snarky, I think there would be some entertaining pieces of conversation that come from it as well.
I hadn't thought about Iron Man's ability to set stuff up for you. That would be awesome. Yeah, agreed. So I've got one more choice.
Yep, you got one more.
Okay. You've had time to think about this. I wonder if you've prepared some good ones. You know what? I'm going to go for... I could go for the low-budget version of Iron Man in Rocket, but I feel like he'd just be a strictly worse version of your choice. So I'm going to go with his buddy, Groot. Groot is a cool tree, right?
Stole my Groot!
Really? I stole your Groot? Yes! Let's talk about why Groot would be such a good choice. He's a cool tree. He can control plants, right? He can set you up a sweet tree house. He can help you grow crops. Any other reason that you would take him?
Man, there's nothing better than sitting on the beach with some shade. No matter where the sun is, Groot could just move, give you some shade. He could make you a hammock. Ooh, I think Groot's a great choice.
Yeah, we're in. Okay, so I think as we both pick Groot, I think he's the winner, right? We have to declare that Groot would be the best island buddy.
I think Groot might be the best island buddy. I wonder. I guess we could just stop this game now. I don't think there's anyone better than Groot. I was saving Groot. Oh, I can't believe you stole him. Ugh. Well, I hope you never get stranded on a desert island, Pat. But if you do, I hope that Groot or Doctor Strange can keep you company. So we want to thank everyone for listening to the podcast. Let us know what you think about it. Any ratings on iTunes or Spotify would be greatly appreciated. Let us know what lists you have with Ant-Man or Wasp. Let us know if you're Team Ant-Man or Team Wasps. And be sure to check out the Patreon at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. Thank you all so much for listening. And until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere across the Bifrost, skies are that you dare to dream really do come true.
I can't believe you took Groot.
Sorry, I have him on my shelf. I've just finished painting him, and that's what made me think. I looked over and I was like, who could it be? I was like, oh, could be Groot. So I just bad luck on your part.
Yeah, that is bad luck.